VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Game Podcast. I'm Gabriel Marcozzi, and this week I'm pleased to be joined by Mr. Tony Evans, Mr. Patty Barkley, and broadcasting live from Rippendon at Clark Carlisle's house. No, nearby, it's Ollie Kay. Today we'll be focusing on the controversial match between Chelsea and Tottenham Hotspur, and also Arsenal. Have they potentially changed the season with their win over Manchester United? And also we'll be asking the panel, who's going down as we take a look at the relegation run-in? So please join us for the next 40 minutes or so for some of the best football conversation you'll hear all week, unless you hang out at Tony Evans' local pub. All right, let's start at the Emirates. Arsenal defeat Manchester United, possibly reopening the title. At least we have another 7 days of excitement, of course, with Chelsea visiting Old Trafford next week. But before we get into the game, the implications, I want to throw something out there. It wasn't that long ago that they had a 12-point lead over Chelsea, playing about Manchester United here. Is this a bit of a late-season collapse, Paddy?
Well, we won't know until next Sunday, and I mean, I just can't see, I just cannot envisage how that game will go. I mean, all I know is it's the most gripping match of the domestic season now.
But for next Sunday, I mean, until now, they had a 12-point lead. Now, yeah, no, they don't have it.
They have fallen. Their away form this season has been very poor for a champion side. There's no question about that. You know, in some games they've been lucky with refereeing decisions and so on. They're not the most resilient Manchester United. They are on their day, but they're a team who we saw in the Champions League game against Chelsea. They can lift themselves to tremendous heights for games, but when they're just giving a normal performance, they're not that special. I think we're going to get. We're gonna see who's. Basically, we've got a meritocratic league at last, and it may all end on Sunday. But basically what people have been saying. It's not a great Manchester United side. They're just proving it.
Tony, looking at the match, I thought Arsenal really played very well, especially in the first half. And sometimes we jump to conclusions, but obviously Cesc Fabregas was the guy who wasn't there, and Aaron Ramsey was there, and I'm sure this will prompt some people to suggest that maybe Cesc is part of the problem and not part of the solution. Is that crazy talk?
Almost, but not quite. I mean, the reality is that when you've got the likes of Cesc and Nasri in there, there's too much of sideways ball. The one thing Ramsey does, he goes up and down the pitch. He's an up and down midfielder, and he'll work box to box. And I think they need more of that. I think, you know, the balance hasn't been quite right in the Arsenal midfield. But I mean, in terms of the title race, you know, I'd say the one thing that's happened over the last few months, we've all been fixated on Torres and the Champions League in terms of Chelsea. And Torres has distracted us from Lampard hitting form again, beginning to score again, and Drogba being superb. And the fact that Chelsea have taken, 36 points from 14 games? You know, they've started to play well again. So, you know, it's... As I say, we tend to get obscured by these seemingly big issues and miss the simple things that, like, Chelsea have been playing quite well. And, not the hardest run, but they have been playing quite well.
Paddy, why was Arsenal better?
Simply because they were really up for this game. I mean, they should have won it. It could have been 4 or 5. The finishing was terrible. The counter-attacking was... fizzled out so many times, a poor ball, even though they often had a numerical advantage over what was a dismal Manchester United team. But no, as far as the Fabregas thing, I don't think the Fabregas thing was involved. He's a better player than Aaron Ramsey is at the moment and probably ever will be, but he's not been good. He's not had a great season.
Two thoughts I had. I mean, one is that Arsenal seem to perform an awful lot better with the pressure off and with the title finally out of their range than they have done for the past couple of months. I think they've thrived now that March and April and the misery of that is over, and I think that probably raises as many questions as it, you know, it's more questions than answers territory. But regarding United, they've had incredible success against Arsenal over the last few seasons, playing 4-3-3 or 4-5-1 or at least a three-man central midfield, and they've gone away from that in their away games in the second half of the season, and the big away games at Chelsea and Liverpool and Arsenal. And obviously it worked in the Champions League at Chelsea, but you look at the results, they're losing these away games that where they would previously not lose, where they would previously get a point or even sneak a win at Arsenal. And I thought they were outnumbered totally in central midfield areas yesterday.
Two big controversial incidents, talking points, I guess. One, Nemanja Vidic's handball, which denied a goal-scoring opportunity at the very least. The other one is Gael Clichy on Michael Owen. Owen, of course, who tweeted that he's going to score a big goal this season. He's running out of games and wondering if it's going to be the Champions League final. I'm assuming we all agree that both should have probably been given, yes?
Without a doubt.
No dissent there?
I'm not absolutely sure about the Clichy one. I mean, we've seen it so many times before from Owen. It probably should have been. The Vidic one should have been a penalty and a red card, of course.
Which brings my point. Sir Alex Ferguson, I guess he didn't quite see it that way, and was rather tough here. And I'm quoting here from Matt Hughes' piece, where he said about the first one, he said, well, it was a definite flick of the hand from Vidic, but it's a very difficult to see that one. So he excuses the referee for not sanctioning it. Mm-hmm. But we all had a clear view of the second one. It was a clear penalty kick. We're not going to get decisions like that in a major game. We don't get to see these decisions. Now, you know, Matt suggests in his piece that, you know, it's a provocative claim, which I think it pretty much is, and it's likely to be examined by the FA. Mm. Paddy, is it a case that the difference is between saying the referee got it wrong and we don't get those decisions? Is that the difference?
It's the same difference, the one he tried to wriggle out of last time after he'd said we need a fair referee. By the way, strong referee. So no doubt he'll try to wriggle out of this one as well. But it's basically the organised paranoia thing again. He's been done. He had a two-match suspension, so the last time they added it up to 5. I think this time it's got to be 10. It is becoming utterly ridiculous, and he's just not learning. So,
so you're going to make him sit in the stands with his white phone?
No. What I would do, I'll tell you exactly what I'd do. I'd ban him for 10 matches, beginning the first 4 would be at the. Have they got 4 left this season? 3, and the first 7 of next season. And during the summer, the FA should do something. Instead of twiddling their thumbs all summer, at their summer meeting, they should change the sanction on managers to in line with UEFA's, so that basically he won't be allowed to be with his team or, more important, harassing referees during match days for the first 7 matches of next season. And if that doesn't work, double it again.
Tony, if you as a fan get a banning order, you have to go report to the police station. You're not allowed anywhere near the ground. Managers get banned or they get sent off in the case of Mourinho in the Champions League last week, and he just sits in the first row next to the bench.
Yeah, and
we
even
need to change this, yeah.
And you know, even in the past against Bayern Munich, he was smuggled into the game in a laundry skip into the dressing room. Actually, you know what? That's a good idea. Let's make them go to the game in a laundry skip and be filmed. The humiliation might mean they don't do this thing very often. But you know, I think the point is, I don't mind managers saying he got this wrong.
Yeah.
It's the language that's crept into the game against Blackburn. You know, Wenger said he was disgusted by a linesman's decision. Disgusted. Mm. You know, and then you've got Ferguson, the ultimate, the governed hypocrite. Yesterday, the socialist who takes a knighthood. There you've got him saying, oh yeah, yeah, the referee wouldn't have seen the one that was against us. But yeah, you had to see the one, you know, for us. It's just crap. And anyone who takes these fellas seriously is mad. And if the FA had any balls, they'd clamp down and they'd really, I agree with Paddy, ban them for a long length of time and have it shut them up.
Yes.
Ollie, you wrote a column about this today, and I'm always intrigued by this. We've met these managers. We know these are intelligent people, and I'm always left to wonder, you know, when they come out with these statements after the game, is it just the fact that it's, you know, the post-match intensity, or are they sending a message? Is there a plan afoot when they come out and say stuff like this? But you point out in your column today that it's a bit of, if it's the latter, it's a bit of a double-edged sword.
Well, I mean, Ferguson and other managers always use this excuse of, you know, they're talking in the heat of the moment, cameras, microphones thrust in front of their faces, and they have to give, you know, they're expected to give calculated, measured appraisals so soon after the final whistle. I think they are measured and calculated appraisals. I think Ferguson knows exactly what he's saying there. I think Mourinho knew exactly what he was saying last week in Madrid. I think, you know, Tony Pulis and other managers, Wenger, I think they all know exactly what they're saying. As Tony was saying, there's this particular language that has crept into managers' post-match talk. And I think a lot of it does come from Ferguson. He's not the only culprit, but he's very influential in this regard. And I genuinely don't think that they believe that, you know, some of this stuff they're saying. But they're saying it to impress on, well, they're trying to influence what's written, certainly. But I think more importantly, they're trying to influence what the fans think, and more important than that, what the referees think in the next game. And they want to plant a seed in the referee's mind so that...
But that's why it's so serious. That's why it's so serious. If it becomes, and it will, if it becomes the assumption, and it spreads, you know, downwards, as undoubtedly it always does, so that if Exeter, for example, lose a match that ends in their being relegated, you know, half of Exeter will think that that's because the blue square thing have got something against it. You know, this is a horribly infectious thing that Ferguson's done, and it's something that for the first 120 years of the professional game's existence didn't happen. It's Ferguson and people like him, acolytes like Mourinho, who are poisoning the game, and I really think it's time for much more serious sanctions to be taken against them than have been done so far.
I guess I'll play devil's advocate here. I come from a country where people have said things like that for many years. We're not going to get those decisions and so on. And
we've laughed at you.
You laughed at us. And then we woke up one morning.
But now we're the same.
No. But what I'm driving at, we woke up one morning in 2006, in May, and found out that it was all true.
Yeah.
There was some direction. People were assigning certain referees to certain games with a reason. Referees were handing out certain yellow cards so players would be banned in certain matches later.
And funnily enough, it was the big, powerful clubs who were doing this.
Yeah.
It wasn't the little ones on the end of it. And who's doing all the whinging now? Ferguson, Mourinho, Wenger. Yes.
Yeah, okay, but
are they connected with big,
sorry,
powerful clubs?
Well, yes, they are. But, you know, Inter Milan and Roma were big, powerful clubs. In Italy, Barcelona are a big, powerful club. Arsenal are a big, powerful club, and they get the benefit of this decision. And I'm still wearing my devil's advocate hat here. But is there any way we can conceive of a conspiracy, I guess, is what I'm driving at?
No.
Absolutely. Ollie, you can rule that out 100%.
100%.
There is no conspiracy. Ferguson shouldn't go out there and say, why Atkinson? Why whoever the fool is refereed yesterday? Oh, God, Foy. Why Peter Walton? He shouldn't go out and do that.
No, I think there's potentially an argument to be had about certain referees being able to handle a big occasion. I don't think managers should make that statement, certainly not before and not after a big game. But you do get unfair decisions, but it's a long way to go from unfair decisions to saying that there's an unfair conspiracy against
them. We saw the conspiracy yesterday, didn't we? One went for United, one went against them. Yep. Some conspiracy.
Yes.
And you go back to that United-Chelsea game last season where Ferguson, I'm sure, will trot that out several times this week about Drogba's offside goal. Drogba did score an offside goal, but Chelsea were also denied a penalty in the first half, a very clear penalty. Yes. I think it was possibly Gary Neville or somebody on Malouda. United's late goal in that game came off Makeda's hand. I mean, this is the sort of selective memory, selective appraisal. Fans have to stop.
I think West Brom have more to complain. Now, Gary Neville brings a chainsaw onto the pitch,
and
kills two men, and they don't give a penalty.
Even the example that people hold up of a referee not being up to the task, the Tom Henning of Rebo instance. Nobody mentions that in the first leg of that match, the two key decisions, including the award of a penalty that should have involved a red card, went in favour of Chelsea.
Because Rebo wasn't refereeing that game.
No, but the point is that the balance of refereeing...
Right. Well, I mean, I take your point.
Over the two legs.
Perhaps another argument might have also been Abidal's red card. If you are manipulating the game,
exactly.
Why do you send somebody off from halfway down the pitch?
The only thing, if you examine these things, examine them intelligently and honestly, the only conclusion you ever come to is the one Tony has led us towards, which is that there isn't any conspiracy and that these things balance out.
On to Stamford Bridge, Chelsea against Tottenham Hotspur. Okay. Gomez spills the ball. We don't really need to have a debate on goal line technology, do we? Because we're all in agreement.
What? Goal line technology, it depends what you mean by that. Do you mean something with that will only tell whether the ball's over the line?
Yes.
No, I'm very much against that. Fundamentally against that. I think we need a television, because what you will have...
We need a television?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Basically, the fourth official needs to watch the game on television, as most of the spectators do. If you do that, you restore the original balance between spectator and referee, which existed before television was invented, and everything would be fine. The problem is, if you bring in goal line technology, it would be the most disastrous thing that you could do. Because what you would then do is you would provide fairness in that, but not in the other decision. And if you look at the, for example, the Chelsea-Tottenham game, perfect example, the Lampard goal would not have counted, although his goal would have counted in South Africa. And then people would have said, yes, but the Kalou one was even more blatant. Why can't we have offside technology? And then you will end up with a sort of judicial inflation in which people will be demanding exactitude in every decision. Then you will destroy the game. And it dismays me that Blatter, who talks about tradition, is flirting with goal line technology, which will destroy the tradition of the game, and not simply bringing in television assistance, which will restore us to our traditional balance between the naked eye between spectator and official. I mean, to me, I've absolutely no problem with the fifth and sixth official. I mean, I'd have a seventh and eighth, but and the ninth and a tenth. I mean, the more people helping the referee, the better. But I can't understand why this has to always miss out the fourth.
I want to steer back to the game. I want to say this about Gomez. I mean, Lampard said he was due one after Bloemfontein. Fair enough. I'm wondering if Gomez was due one too, because I don't think he's that bad a goalkeeper. And I'm going out on a limb here in defending him. But he strikes me as the classic goalkeeper who makes saves he's not supposed to make.
Yeah.
And then he goes and does things like this. And we're always suspicious of it because we want security above all from our goalkeeper. But in the end, should we be thinking of goalkeepers maybe more in the way that we think of strikers? I mean, Gomez saved Tottenham's bacon many times this season by making saves he wasn't supposed to make. Mm-hmm. And then here, perhaps he cost them a point.
Well, he's got all the physical tools. You know, he's a great shot stopper. He's unsure coming out for the ball in his area and always has been. You know, and he probably doesn't understand the physicality of the game in, you know, in this country. But, you know, he's a better goalkeeper than the joke figure people.
Tony will recognise the parallel with Bruce Grobbelaar.
Well, yeah,
he was always a trade-off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I must admit, I hated watching him, you know, because you never knew what you were going to get. But, you know, he'd probably give you more points over the season than he lost you. And probably Gomez has the season.
Do you remember that season when Liverpool would have gone through the whole season without defeat, but for Grobbelaar chucking one in a derby?
Yes.
But did you mind? You still won the league.
Won the league by then.
And the goalie played a part in it.
Yeah. Paddy, coupled with last week's result, the home draw against West Brom,
yes.
Does this mean that Spurs have just said au revoir to the Champions League next season?
Yes, I do think that. They can work to get back into it. It's not going to get any easier. We've got Liverpool, but another thing we saw yesterday, we saw that Liverpool are certainly going to be pushing for Champions League.
Are they going to make up 7 points? And
No, but next season.
I remember this season. So this season, the Champions League's done. So
they're capable of doing it.
I want you to tell me, if you're Daniel Levy, right, this summer.
Yes.
I'm just trying to like you to tell me, what should he be thinking of? Because he's got a manager
Don't go crazy.
Well, but he's got a manager who will leave him.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Either against his will in June or to go manage England after Euro 2012. That's pretty much guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever you do, you have to probably do in terms of medium-term building, you know, with a new manager. Should he start thinking of the new manager now?
Yes, absolutely. I would be surprised and disappointed if he didn't already have a list. What you don't spend money. Is accede to any requests Redknapp may make to go big spending. You must not do that. That would be an absolute disaster for a club. Yes, and if he does, go. I mean, he's going to go.
Good riddance.
Yes, absolutely good riddance. They've had a good...
Are you guys criticising Harry Redknapp next England manager?
No, I'm only criticising him if he threatens to go, if he isn't given money, then it would be good riddance. Of course, he's brought absolute joy to Tottenham Hotspur and English football. They are, they've probably, in many cases, overtaken Arsenal as most people's second favourite team. So, you know, no... absolutely not. We're not slagging off Harry Redknapp. We're just saying if he wants to go, there's the door.
Well, I am sort of, because we've seen all Harry's strengths and weaknesses this season, haven't we? We've seen teams that have played with gay abandon. We've seen them have great results, and we've seen them ship goals, and we've seen a tactical naivety which, you know, stunned me. You know, even when I was coaching San Clemente under-12s, even I wasn't as tactically naive.
When you were doing the San Clemente under-12, were those boys or girls?
Boys, although I did do girls as well, you know.
Did you never coached against Michael Emanalo's team, did you?
No, I didn't, no.
Okay, just wondering.
Just checking.
Ollie, seriously, when you look at the Spurs team, I mean, Van der Vaart, I was very skeptical about his signing at the start of the season, and I ate humble pie. I said, oh, no, I was wrong. Van der Vaart's great, but he's been awful the last couple months. You've got a messy situation with the strikers. Strikers you can't move, strikers who don't score. At the back, William Gallas isn't getting any younger. Some people might say Sebastian Bassong isn't getting any better. Huddleston's coming back from this horrible injury. You don't know what's going on with him. Are Spurs, put it this way, if Redknapp goes, is he leaving Spurs in good shape, or will his successor, or Redknapp himself if he stays, still have a lot to do with this team?
Well, I don't think there's an awful lot to do. I just think it's a big squad of, there are a lot of quality players in there, but it's not really very obvious what you would do next to take them to the next level, or to try to establish them as a regular top four team, which is something that they haven't been for years and years and years.
Tell you what, getting rid of Pavlyuchenko would help, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, it probably would, but...
Is that not the worst centre-forward in the Premier League?
Stop it.
I think he's a long way from that.
He's not even the worst centre-forward on Spurs.
I think a mobility scooter for Huddleston, you know, would be a start.
He's big boned. Stop it. And he's been injured.
Have Spurs got one centre-forward as good as Kevin Doyle? No. The answer is no.
I mean,
they're bits and pieces. They're Dave Clark 5, strike force.
I wouldn't say that Kevin Doyle is necessarily better than all Spurs strikers. I think he's had a better season.
I'll tell you, I think he's better than all three put together.
Right. Well, I don't think... I don't remember sort of when Crouch and Defoe have been scoring goals in the past... for club and country, people saying, "God, if only Kevin Doyle was English." He's a good player, but I would suspect that if he'd been at Spurs, he would have fallen victim to the same malaise that has.
I think it does. It does help when if you're fit, you play, and I don't think it's helped in particular Crouch. I don't think it's helped Crouch or Defoe that their careers are so staccato.
Well, there you have it. That probably could be our debate for this week. Who's better, Kevin Doyle or the Spurs' entire strike force? But instead, we have a different debate lined up for you, and we're going to take a closer look at the relegation run-in. Now, we're going to have a little bit of fun with this. We've identified six at-risk teams: Birmingham, Blackburn Rovers, Blackpool, Wigan Athletic, Wolves, and, of course, West Ham United. Real simple. We're going to go around and I will ask one of you to tell me why this team is staying up. The next one will tell me why the team is going down. And the third one will give his verdict. And we will rotate so somebody doesn't have to be Mr. Negativity the whole time. Tony.
I'd like being negative.
Yeah, you'd send them all down, wouldn't you?
Oh,
you'd send all six teams down.
And... I tell you what, up to fifth place, all of them gone. All of them.
Provided Liverpool don't finish sixth, of course.
Well, if they do finish sixth, damn as well.
There you go. Here we go. Birmingham City. They are currently in 15th place. They're on 39 points. That's a point more than Blackburn in 16th. They have a minus 17 goal difference. And their run-in is comprised of Newcastle away, Fulham at home, and Spurs away on the last day of the season. Paddy, why are Birmingham City going to stay up?
They're going to stay up because they've got a lot of good, experienced players, and they can prove it by showing us their medals. They're the only players in the country that can show us their medals this season.
Well, because of the League Cup.
Mm.
Tony, is that a persuasive argument? I take it no. You're going to tell me why Birmingham City are going down.
Well, I would have said until Saturday that they were in free until yesterday they were in free fall. I don't think they could at the moment because I don't think anyone under them are going to get the points to get above them. So I could make something up for you. But would that be very satisfying for the listenership out there? Have I spoiled the whole thing now?
All right, you spoiled my little game, but that's all right. We persevere. Ollie, your verdict. Birmingham staying up or going down?
Staying up.
Tony, Blackburn Rovers, 38 points, minus 14 goal difference. They've got a little 3-point cushion over Blackpool. And their run-in is West Ham away, what we used to call a 6-pointer in my day. United at home, easy peasy 3 points. And Wolves away, potentially another 6-pointer. Tony, why are Rovers staying up?
Because I think they'll manage to take a point at the two relegation rivals in the 6-pointers. I think they'll become 2-pointers, one each, and I think that'll be enough to keep them up.
Staying up with 40 points. Ollie, why could Blackburn be relegated?
Because I'm not convinced that they will pick up more points. You look at those two away games, West Ham and Wolves, and everything is going to be, I mean, those are going to be two frenetic occasions, frenetic atmospheres. All the support for the home team completely pumped up, and Blackburn maybe starting to get a little bit complacent. I still don't think they're playing for their manager really. Good win the other day, but I think there are an awful lot of problems at Blackburn. I'm not saying that they will go down, but I don't think they'll. If Wolves and West Ham and Wigan get their act together, then Blackburn are in serious danger of getting caught.
Paddy, you get the verdict on this. Will your fellow Scot and fellow member of the shaven-headed fraternity, Steve Keane, keep Blackburn Rovers up?
Yes. I can see them getting 2 points. I can see... I don't know what has put this idea in my head. I can even see them taking one of them from Manchester United.
Ooh.
And I think they'll stay up. I think 2 points will be enough. 40 points will keep Blackburn up.
You listening, Ancelotti? Blackpool and Ian Holloway, they're in 17th place, 35 points, level with Wigan, 1 point ahead of Wolves. They have a goal difference of minus 22, and their run-in is Tottenham Hotspur away, Bolton at home, Manchester United away. Ollie, why is Ollie staying up?
Because they've got that little cushion, and they've got a home game against Bolton, which I think everything will hinge on that for them. If they can win that, then they've got a decent chance of staying up. If they can rediscover the enthusiasm and energy that they were showing prior to their very expected dip, then they will stay up, but it is a very big if.
You could see Owen Coyle resting everybody, maybe playing Adam Bogdan as a centre forward and himself in goal just for fun in that game. Paddy, why is Ollie going down?
Well, because the defence has never been quite... They played lovely football. They played great football, and I'll be sorry to see the back of them. But the defence is not quite good enough. Plus, I think it'll go to the last day, and on the last day, they'll be playing a Manchester United team who are either trying to beat them to win the league or to play well so they get a place in the Champions League final 6 days later. So, Blackpool... It's back to where you came from.
You don't think United will give them the points if they beat Chelsea this weekend, like they did against West Ham a few years ago, and then they signed Tevez like the following week?
No.
Interesting. Tony, your verdict?
All season, they've run out of steam in the second half. I say they're running out of steam here. Down.
Roberto Martinez and Wigan Athletic, 18th place, 35 points, level with Blackpool, but slightly worse goal difference of minus 23. And their run-in reads Aston Villa away, West Ham at home, yet another 6-pointer, and Stoke away on the last day of the season. Paddy, make an argument why Roberto Martinez will keep them up again.
I think they will, partly, and you've alluded to it in the way you framed the question, because I think the experience does help. I think they've got the perfect run-in. The goal difference does worry me slightly, but I think they can rectify that. The 6-pointers on their ground, absolutely vital. And
on their ground, which is always full, and they get so much support, right? And such a good pitch.
They do get actually good support from a small number of people. So I think yes, Wigan Athletic to stay up.
Tony, tell me why Roberto is doomed.
Well, I thought they had safety in their hands on Saturday, and then, of course, they went and handled the bloody ball in the box, and they dropped 2 points to Everton. I think that'll be a massive 2 points for them, and I think that will be the moment they will regret all through the summer.
Bit of karma, eh? Ollie, you get the deciding vote.
I would like to be nice and say that everybody would stay up, but Wigan are very vulnerable. If they don't win that home game against West Ham, I'm not sure where else the points are going to come from. So I'm going to say down.
Wolverhampton Wanderers and Yorkshire Mick. Barnsley Mick, actually. West Brom at home. Big derby there. Sunderland away. Sunderland, who I think have been on holiday for about 3 months. And we need to get Culkin in for that one. And Blackburn Rovers at home on the last day of the season. They have 34 points, 1 point behind Wigan, 2 points ahead of West Ham, and a goal difference of minus 23. Tony, why are Wolves staying up?
Sunderland.
Nice and neat. Can't argue with that. Sunderland's just everybody's whipping boy.
What else you want me to say?
All right. Ollie, you got to argue why Wolves could be going down.
Well, if we're assuming that Sunderland are completely busted flush, then West Ham have got to play them as well. So Wolves have got a good run in two home games and an away game against Sunderland, but it's pressure on, and I would say that yesterday was an occasion where they should have picked up points, 3 points.
No question about that one, Paddy.
Yeah, well, I take Wolves to win one and draw another of their final three games and still go down.
38 points. So West Ham, bottom of the table, 32 points, goal difference of negative 23. Interesting run-in. Blackburn at home, Wigan Athletic away, Sunderland at home. Ollie, why are West Ham staying up?
Because they tend to stay up. They tend to get away with it. They've got a good couple of games left. Blackburn home, Sunderland at home, Wigan away. They could feasibly get 7-9 points for that. Whether that or not that is enough, I don't know. But they will get points, and I think with Scott Parker coming back, they will have a little burst of form and get something back that they've been lacking the last few weeks.
Paddy,
I don't see them winning all three. I think the excellent run spell they did have, when it looked as if they were going to sail out of trouble, has come to an end. And there's no guarantee, of course, that when Parker comes back that he'll instantly recover his prime form. So it's down for West Ham.
Judge Evans?
Bad ownership, who are happy with parachute payments. A manager who can't even keep his notes together. And players who know they won't be there next season. Gone. Forgotten.
All right, well, looks like we may have to engage in some form of, we might change our voting system and engage in some form of alternative voting here. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, four of the six teams you have all picked to go down. So we will simply put it to a vote and see how clever our panel is. I will ask you to pick three teams to go down. And then you can pick your second choice, your third choice. No, I'm just
Thank
kidding.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Paddy.
Yep. My three to go down are West Ham, Wolves, and Blackpool.
Tony.
West Ham, Wigan, Blackpool.
Ollie.
West Ham, Wigan, Blackpool.
There you have it. There's no point in me casting a deciding vote because your teams going down are West Ham, Blackpool, and Wigan. Hammers fans, Latics fans, and Blackpool fans.
We dance on your grave.
If you don't like it, please direct complaints to Messrs. Barkley, Evans, and Kay. All right, as the producer Chris Skinner likes to say, we go off the fence now for some quick hits. Peter Ottavinki scores again for West Brom as they beat Aston Villa 2-1 and pretty much secure their place in the Premier League next season. Paddy, Chicharito has gotten a lot of love as the Premier League's best newcomer, but Arangui has been as influential, if not more, in keeping them up. And in fact, some people might say he's been more influential in keeping him up than your god Scott Parker has as well, but I digress. Which signing was more crucial this season?
It's a tough one, I suppose, Chicharito, if Manchester United win the league and the Champions League.
But, yeah, but West Brom are going to stay up. Exactly. Manchester United won diddly so far.
No, I'm not making light of your point. It's a very good one. I would say, though, that Odemwingie hasn't done it alone. I think we're terribly striker-centric in the way we discuss football. And I think that the quality of the passing from midfield for West Bromwich has been absolutely splendid, all season. And since Hodgson's gone, they defend as well.
Sorry, I was trying to blow before you could get to Hodgson. Tony told me to do that. Manchester City stay on track for a top-four finish, beating West Ham 2-1, though the match was less comfortable than you might think. Ollie, is a Champions League spot enough for Roberto Mancini to keep his job, or does he also need to win that thing they call the FA Cup?
Well, I think if they don't win the FA Cup, I think that an awful lot of questions will be raised about Manchester City and about which way Mancini's taking them. And I think it's overly simplistic to judge a manager on a cup final and the result in a cup final. But I would say Manchester City have underperformed in the Premier League, whether they finish top four or not. They've underperformed. They need to win the FA Cup.
So he needs to win both to keep his job, is what you're saying?
Well, it's not a case of winning both. It's a case of winning one and finishing top four. I don't think that's the owner's frame of mind at the moment, but I think failure to win the FA Cup would plant a seed that says that this hasn't been acceptable.
I just hope we hear Gary Cook use the word trajectory again. Liverpool pummel Newcastle, who may or may not have been thinking of their summer hauls right now, but they're now alongside Spurs in fifth place. Tony, very simple question. Would you offer Kenny Dalglish the job right now?
Well, as I'm the man who would have offered him the job the day after Rafa Benitez was sacked, I think there's an obvious answer to that. The reality is, I dare Fenway Sports Group to sack him. I dare them. I dare them to bring someone else in. Go ahead. Let's see how far you get.
Make his day.
Gab, one for you. Three of the four Europa League semi-finalists are from Portugal. And after that astonishing 5-1 comeback win by Porto against Villarreal in the first leg, we're virtually assured a Portuguese winner. Is there a broader significance here, or is it just happenstance?
I think there is a broader significance, which is that, you know, it's just as important, especially if you're a second-tier club, and inevitably, simply by virtue of being a Portuguese club, they're going to be in a European context, they're going to be second-tier clubs. You have to know how to sell well and buy well and constantly reinvent yourself. If you look at Benfica last year losing, the likes of Ramirez and David Luiz and Braga losing the goalkeeper Eduardo and, you know, Porto getting a new manager in Villas Boas, all these teams have really managed to reinvent themselves. They've come back this season just as strong. Villas Boas, of course, his debut season. He's the hot guy everybody wants. But I think it really shows that Portuguese football is certainly run much, much better than the Portuguese economy.
And if you were Fenway Sports Group, who would you have as the next Liverpool manager? Kenny Dalglish or André Villas-Boas?
I think André Villas-Boas is off the market right now. But if I were at Fenway Sports Group, I would certainly pursue him, but for the future. The guy's 32, 33 years old. I don't think he's ready to manage Liverpool. Thank you for spending your time with us. You can go to www.thetimes.co.uk for all your news, your gossip, your analysis. We also now have these funky talking audio-visual slides, which Patty does, right?
Yeah, very
you've done
well,
one
actually,
anyway.
Yeah.
Also, our web chats. Mine is today on a bank holiday Monday, but Patty, yours is on
Tuesday.
And you can also catch some Graham Spears and some Ollie K during the week. You can always follow us on Twitter as well. I'm at Marcotti. K is at Oliver K Times and Patty is at P Barkley Times, if I'm not mistaken.
You're not.
It's goodbye from me and Patty. Say goodbye, Patty.
Goodbye, Patty.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hi. This is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.